I say, as a matter of practice, we just don't let Elise talk during this one.
And then
so we're also covering the other one.
So when
at the
we come back to it, we're ready for
it. It's a special twofer episode.
You'll have more things to say.
It'd be like in the 90s when they did a very special episode of, you know, whatever. We'll have our very special episode about not letting Elise talk.
Silent, yeah. The problem is going to be my feelings are going to be hurt when people prefer this episode where I don't talk.
I don't know that there's evidence to suggest people prefer it when you don't talk.
They might write in and say, wow, this episode was especially good. What was it?
There have been plenty of episodes where you have not been a part of the conversation for one reason or another, and no one has written in to say that yet.
No, they want her in the room, not talking.
Right, yeah.
Intentionally silenced is what they. That's what's missing.
More into it,
That's what our listeners are looking for.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor Jim Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Getting the gang back together.
Yeah, good job last week. I was homesick.
Thanks.
You were homesick?
I was homesick, yes.
Aww. Someday you'll get there, bunny.
I was holding my...
Cuddle your teddy bear.
My teddy, my lovey. It was tough. Yeah, some tears were shed.
Given what I know about you and sickness, I imagine
I
that to be
say,
true.
Is it because you had a bad cold?
I don't cry when I'm sick.
I don't believe you.
But I don't, you know. Whatever.
Do you get more emotional?
I'm with the Gen Zs right now. I want bad things to happen to bad people.
Yeah, you do.
Namely, in the room. Yeah.
Well, we're with Jesus, so.
Right. Girl Jesus heard that.
Girl Jesus?
Yeah.
Girl Jesus right there.
Oh, our very effeminate Jesus that's in the room with us? Yeah.
It's not Girl Jesus. He still has a beard.
Girls can have beards.
I mean.
The bearded lady, for instance.
Most of the older women you know who do not have beards because they pluck those beards.
They don't have a beard like that.
They don't. Yeah, that's a very full beard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's definitely using some product in that hair.
100%.
And he has mascara
some conditioner
on.
Or something.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just naturally...
And some highlights. I mean, we can't deny the highlights.
Yeah. Self-care Jesus might be a better.
I would say the highlights in the hair could be just natural from the Middle Eastern sun.
Middle Eastern sun, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Some people are just blessed with natural highlights.
They are.
Sure.
Like me. Yeah. Hair flip, listeners.
In case you didn't hear that.
Right.
All right. Have you ever ridden in a Waymo?
No, I'm like on the cusp of riding in a Waymo.
Okay, you're on the cusp.
Yeah.
It could happen in any minute.
I feel like it's maybe a week or two and I'm going to be in one. I'll report back.
Yeah. What? What's going to happen?
Are you Waymo curious?
I am Waymo curious, honestly.
I mean, I'm definitely Waymo curious, but I'm not sitting here thinking like in a week or two it's going to happen.
Just going to have an opportunity. Maybe I'll need a ride somewhere.
But they're not around here.
They're just in downtown. Yeah.
They are in downtown Houston now? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So you got to go downtown. You're going to drive downtown
and
get into a driverless vehicle.
Yes, get a ride somewhere else.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you ever like go in between like a bar and a restaurant?
Okay.
And you're like, I don't want to like move the car and pay for parking twice. Like,
sure.
So I'm going to spend $60 on this Uber ride.
I don't do that. But sure. Yeah. I believe you that it's a thing that people
I don't go downtown to eat.
Yeah.
Or really at all.
I mean, I would go downtown to eat, but I don't move my,
It's just you go one destination.
Yeah.
And
I go here.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So. Well, you're going to miss out on the Waymo rides. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm very interested in the concept of riding in a Waymo. Mm-hmm. I have ridden in a self-driving car when it is self-driving, but there was still a driver in the car.
See, I'm gonna need to ride in the driver's seat in the Waymo.
Do they let you do that?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think you're allowed to sit in the driver's seat in the Waymo.
Are you not?
I don't know.
I've
never been.
It'll make me feel much better if I'm like.
I believe you, but I don't.
you have an option for control,
right?
I don't think you're allowed to control the Waymo. I think that's a no-no.
I know you're not supposed to control it, but like. Being able to maybe stomp my foot on the brake.
I don't think
happens.
It will do anything if you do.
All right. Well, this Atlanta neighborhood got Waymo than they bargained for.
Waymo.
is that you or is that the article?
That is me.
Wow.
Yeah. When hundreds of Waymos descended into their neighborhood and just drove around the cul-de-sacs every day.
Okay. Fleets of Waymos
like
just coming.
Like an infestation.
Yeah.
Like locusts. Yeah.
The Waymos are swarming.
Yeah. One resident said, I think yesterday we had 50 cars come through between 6 and 7. That they are just circling the cul-de-sacs of the neighborhood.
Like they just keep circling over and over, like they drive in, circle, and drive
yeah,
out.
Yeah, they drive, circle one, come drive another. They're just in this neighborhood just driving around.
Wow, okay. Wow.
This Waymo zombie apocalypse is like just circling their neighborhood.
So weird.
Because it seemed like there was a glitch in their software that they
thought... You want to hear about a glitch in software for a driver's
no,
cars.
No, I don't want that, yeah.
They thought that there could be an uptick in, like, passengers in this one neighborhood.
So the Waymos
and
were
so all
like all
the Waymos descended to and just circled around and got trapped and got stuck.
They're basically staging themselves, thinking that we need to pick people up, and then nobody was there. Yeah. You know, if there's going to be a glitch in the software, I'm okay with that kind of glitch. Like, I'm okay with them thinking that there's going to be a surge, and so I need to go over here to get ready. Right. Like, I'm okay with that.
Right.
Because they didn't
not
hit.
Like a, we're going to run over pedestrians. Yeah.
It's
glitch,
not like the glitch is, oh, we need to stay here so we can crash into all of their houses simultaneously.
You're going to drive into their front doors.
It's not a coordinated attack.
Yeah.
Until you're in the back of that Waymo, where it's just circling this cul-de-sac. Right. You're just trapped. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they did get stuck. Eight Waymos did get stuck in a cul-de-sac, not knowing how to turn around, just circling it.
I love that. Okay.
Yeah.
Some residents have said they have been some near misses with cats, dogs, and children.
Mm. Oh, children.
Children's
yeah.
bad.
Yeah, that.
Well, dogs are awesome, and cats are also bad.
Excuse him, audience members.
I'm just saying, as far as like the things that should stop this sort of technology, I'm more concerned about children than I am about cats or dogs, as far as things that should like stop the technology.
Yeah. I mean, I am too more concerned about children.
I don't want the Waymo to intentionally hit the dog or cat. Right. I just, you know.
You could get probably a pretty good settlement from Waymo, though, if it ran over your dog.
Maybe.
I would think.
I bet they're pretty well lawyered up for that sort of thing.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, Waymo did recall over 3,000 vehicles because they were driving into floods.
Driving into floods?
Yes.
I've seen the video of the one driving through the active shootout. Have you seen that? It's amazing.
Were there people in the car?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I think that is probably the factor that I don't want to get into Waymo.
Active shootout?
No, it could just want to go somewhere and you're powerless in the back.
Yeah. It's true. There's no like human reasoning happening like, oh, people are shooting at each other. I shouldn't take this street.
Sure.
It's just the street is not blocked.
But I think at any point you could say like, let me out here.
In the middle of this active shootout.
I mean, I'm not saying that's
or a flood.
Yeah, or this flood. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Waymo with caution.
No, no.
Right?
Yeah, ideally, yes. But obviously there are glitches that make it do things it should not do. So who knows what could happen.
Right.
Yeah. You know, is this a what would you rather, man or Waymo in the woods?
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, what would you rather?
Waymo.
Yeah. Agreed.
Put the bear in the Waymo and I'll still pick it.
If nothing else, the Waymo's not going to talk to me while I'm in the car.
Right,
so.
Yeah.
That's true. Maybe there's a chit-chat option.
Ooh. Yeah. You get the AI bot to talk to you while... Right. And then the Waymo starts to swerve a little, so you get that distracted driver vibe. Yeah, that'll be very nice.
Mm-hmm. It'll be just like an Uber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awkwardly hit on you if you're a single woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. I also do like the idea... of a future world where all of humanity is like dead and Waymos just still circle our neighborhoods looking for us.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Wall-E situation.
Right.
Yeah.
The Waymos are just left circling endlessly. Yeah. Directive. Yeah.
Just looking for their one passenger to fulfill their mission.
That's right.
Yes,
yeah.
All right. Let's get to our main topic.
Let's do it.
That wasn't it.
That was not it, surprisingly. Mm. I mean, is there, we're going to talk about the theology of Waymo.
All right, so if Waymo kills a dog,
mm-hmm.
or if Waymo kills a human,
yeah.
does Waymo, like, does the car need forgiveness? Does the AI need forgiveness?
Oh, does the designer, the programmer of the AI need forgiveness?
Oh, that's a good question. Like, does maybe the theological implication is, like, God designed and programmed humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Our sinfulness, is that a reflection of God's design?
Mm.
Oh,
Is it a bug or a feature?
Yeah, maybe. There you go.
It depends on the sinfulness.
We're not going to discuss that today on the podcast. But
nope.
There you go.
All right.
This is from Christianity Today.
Woo.
From, at this point, good friend of the podcast, Russell Moore.
Russell Moore, unaffiliated with Beth Moore, as far as we know.
Yeah.
Russ and I, we're on first name basis.
Russ is pumping out some articles that I think are kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So good for him as a
way to go, Russ.
As a writer and no longer editor-in-chief of Christianity.
Yeah,
right?
He got the boot.
Demounted or whatever.
I don't think that's it. Because he's still writing for Christianity Today.
I mean, he got removed from that position. I don't know.
I think he removed himself from that position.
That's still a demotion.
I don't think it's a demotion when you quit.
If it is going from a position that's above another position, regardless of how you get there, you're, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Seems pretty clear.
You just sound judgy, honestly.
You do. Yeah.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Well, my apologies to Russ. I'm sure you're listening.
Right. All right. Russ.
Russ, I hope it's going great, man.
All right. This is called Against the Casinofication of the Church.
Casinofication. Okay.
Casinofication.
Yeah. What song are you trying to sing?
Californication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was not clear.
Have you ever been in a casino?
I have been in a casino.
Pointed question. Have you ever been in a casino?
Yeah. Have you gambled in a casino?
I mean, I did slots for a few minutes. Mm. Yeah. Like, Amanda and I were on internship and we went down to do like Hoover Dam and stuff like that. And so we stayed
Hoover Dam.
We stayed at a casino. We saw some shows and did slots for like 5 minutes. Yeah. Because we were poor. So it's not like we had money to lose.
Sure.
Yeah. I went to Vegas with $20.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand how the slot machine works. So like I put it all in.
Mm-hmm.
And lost did one spin? No, I got like $2 extra on the first one, but like did something like triple bet in a row and then immediately lost it. So I don't know. I was like, well, that was fun. Yep.
Yay.
Yeah.
I've been to casino several times. So yeah. It's been a while.
You are a self-proclaimed blackjack aficionado.
Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah. On casino night here at Lord of Life or Pig Roast, I did like.
Oh, that's true. Are we counting Lord of Life as a casino? Because I've been in that twice.
No. I think I've been the chip counter runner-up the last 2 years. Yeah. So.
This is what he claims without any evidence to support this.
Type of blackjack player where I watch and I think, ooh, if this was real money, this would be a real problem. For Patrick.
It's not though. It's not.
It's fake.
It's fake money.
Yeah.
So like I'm in it just for the fun of the experience.
Sure.
But every time he loses, he says, "We're here to gamble, right?"
Yeah. Yeah, because it's fake money. I don't care. What happens if I lose?
It's
nothing.
Pretty great.
What
happens
if I lose? Nothing. Yeah. some of the chip leaders, not this Patrick, but the year before, he has a far bigger bankroll coming into
He's cheating.
Not cheating. It's just buying a win. I'm fine with that.
Buying a win.
Yeah.
Cheating.
I can't buy that same win.
Tim Donahue, you're cheating.
Listen, the goal is to raise money for a good cause. If that happens,
that's not my goal.
Buying a win.
Yeah, Patrick's goal. My goal is to be the chip leader.
That's my goal. So, all right. So anyway. Casinofication of church.
Okay.
We're
putting a lot of slots into the narthex. And
yeah. Okay. I'm for it. A blackjack table.
Sure.
Yeah.
Tithe your winnings.
Great.
Is somebody going to come around and offer me watered down drinks?
I mean, I guess that's kind of what communion wine is.
Yeah. Thimbleful of red
we don't water.
Water.
We don't water it down. It's just already
it just
bad.
It's watered down. Yeah. It's just not great.
Okay, so a couple things. Mm-hmm. One, this is from, he recorded a podcast with a guy from The Atlantic about his essay on he spent a year doing online sports gambling.
Okay.
And what that experience was like.
Who is that guy?
McKay Coppins.
Coppins.
Coppins? Coppins?
I would say Coppins, but sure.
McKay Coppins.
Yeah.
This was like two last names.
That was definitely two last names. Yeah. Yeah.
McKay is an interesting. This is not the point.
No, I think we could break that down for longer.
Yeah.
Obviously, in the conversation, McKay talked about the casinofication of everything.
Okay.
And there's a couple things here. One is he said basically authority figures making decisions from senators to parents about gambling don't understand what gambling is now.
It's fair.
And two, gambling has shifted so much that that it is something completely different than what you would have imagined, you know, years ago, from years ago. So I will say this. One of the times I have been in Vegas, and I went a few times when I was in my 20s. I really have not gone since then. I'm not really all that interested in going back. I did bet on a sports game.
Okay.
I put down $10 on a Spurs game, and me and my friends, we were mostly from the San Antonio area, we bet on the Spurs game, and we sat in the sports book area, we watched the game, drank watered down drinks.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really drink that many because I don't really drink alcohol that much, and we won, and my $10 turned into like $18 or something. Ooh, like that.
Look at you, you know? Go.
Yeah.
Big
but,
money.
But it was like, it was a fun experience, yeah. right? Like it rush. Was fun of like watching this game with your friends. Mm-hmm. There's like a stake to it beyond just like the excitement of your team winning. And like, you know, the cliche is like, you've got skin in the game, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like this is something that happens. But now online gambling is not that. That's no longer sports betting. It's not like you put down $10 on your team
right.
to win, and you're rooting for your team to win, and when they win, you win.
Yeah. I mean, you can do that, but that is not. Yeah.
But that is not what it is. It is something so crazy town that you can bet on literally everything in the game.
And one of the things that I've noticed that's particularly challenging is that it's not called betting anymore. Like a lot of sites are calling it trading, and so you trade on these different options because somehow you're not betting against the house. You're like betting against other people. I don't understand all of it, but it allows them to get around a lot of gambling laws. So you can do this kind of trading on everything in states where you're not allowed to just bet on the outcome of a game.
Yep. Yeah, my first kind of brush with this was I went to a horse race here in Houston like last year, and a friend of mine was trying to place it.
And you're coming at me for letting the Waymo hit the dog, and you're off the horse track.
What? Okay. Anyway, and so my friend was trying to place a bet on a horse, and he was like, I'm going to place a bet on a horse. And the lady was like, What kind of bet? He was like,
a bet.
Like a bet on a horse to win. And she said, oh, honey, you can place a bet on anything.
Yeah.
You can place a bet on a horse tripping. You can place on a bet on a horse pooping on the track. You get like whatever.
Oh, I want that one. I want some action on that. Yeah.
So, really Wait, weird. Yeah.
Which horse is going to drop a deuce? Right. The race?
It's a thing. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That one's got a waddle to him. I like my eyes.
So back to like when my sports bet gambling, you know, experience, like, you know, me and my friends betting on the Spurs, another group over there bet on the opposing team.
Yeah.
There's good natured ribbing. We're both ultimately invested in kind of one thing, who wins this game. But now again, like everything, whatever bet you want to make on a sports thing or really anything, you can.
Yes.
Like, and so sports is now not just like, do you want to bet on your team to win? It's like, do you want to bet this player to get less than 8 points throughout the game?
Yep.
Or the next play, do they make a three or not?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so like in that community who's watching sports and betting, you're not actually rooting for the same things anymore. Or even like me versus you. It's the winner of the game could be irrelevant. We're just rooting for our own individual lane to happen.
Okay.
And like, and that's not just against sports betting. You can bet if there's famines in the world.
You can bet on weather.
You can bet on geopolitical assassinations.
Events. Yeah.
You can bet on if a Venezuelan drug boat is going to be blown up between these dates.
There's actually a lot of like research investigation being done on people who may have been on the inside of military operations from the U.S.
Yeah.
placing bets on operations that were taking place.
100%. Like, yeah, that was very clear. Moments before bombings happened in Iran that there were massive
spikes
bets, you know, on bombings happening in Iran from Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just disgusting behavior, right? Yeah. Like, obviously so immoral. But what does this mean to church? And, like, this is obviously, like, crazy town. Like
from
this,
the gambling perspective? Or
like, obviously, this level of gambling is untenable for humanity.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to crash out at some point. Either everyone's going to be owing, you know, all of their money to gambling sites, or, like, it's going to destroy us, you know, in some ways. Yeah. But what does it mean to church? And I think that this is kind of, like, what is interesting. Like, because it breaks, ultimately it's breaking down like the community, even the community aspect that one could have found in betting on sports. It's everyone's playing their own individual secret game, and it's separated from the actual thing that is supposed to be exciting.
Okay.
Your team winning.
Mm-hmm.
It's now, does my individual bet win or lose? And my team winning is irrelevant.
Sure. Which, I mean, from the perspective of people who are interested in making money, that's great because now you don't have to be invested in a team to watch and care about a game, right?
So, yeah, absolutely.
You know, you, as someone who doesn't particularly follow football, Patrick, right, you can, you know, watch the Texans game because you want to know if this kicker is going to make this next kick, regardless of whether the team wins or loses. Whereas before, you've been like, oh, it's not the Spurs, I don't care, right? Like, and so the market base for people to watch and participate in it is growing and expanding, which is great for people who are trying to make money off of it. But yeah, I think terrible for the opportunity, not necessarily it's not bad that people are watching it, but the way in which people are engaging with it becomes terrible for the actual community aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I see like an obsession with the details, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. As opposed to just like this over like high level, like, oh, I'm involved with something that is exciting and good, you know, if we're talking about church specifically, right? And like shifting to it being like, well, but this is off, or this didn't go the way I wanted to, or, you know, like that could maybe be a mindset that's problematic for church. I'm struggling a little bit to connect the gambling with the church.
What, like, when we're making this connection to the church, like, is that what we're after? Is what Elise is describing what we're after with this casinification of the church, right? Or is that the idea that, like, oh, now we're focused on the details, we're not moving towards a larger goal? Is it that we're separated into smaller and smaller factions that are cheering for our own thing? Is it something else entirely? Yeah.
I think we have a couple things here, and, and I'll circle back to some other aspects of casinification of church. But first is the death of, or the competition between the individual and the community. Mm-hmm. And I think signification is my individual needs matter more than the community goal. Like, I could be so invested in the Spurs. They're gonna, they're in the Western Conference Finals right now. I'm super excited. But if I'm betting on one player to have more or less money, that takes over my desire to see the Spurs win. Mm-hmm. Like, my individual goal matters more.
Right.
And this is what McKay was finding in his year of online sports betting, is like, my individual goals mattered more than my actual team winning or losing, like that. And so, like, when we think of like coming into church or into this kind of aspect of community, is how am I bringing my individual desire above the people around me, my church community? And that's what matters most, is that I'm getting what I want from this church experience.
Yeah.
And probably less about like, am I not going to bet on like what praise songs we sing this Sunday?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I think that there are ways in which that's almost been drawn along denominational lines for a long time. I mean, there are certainly denominations and traditions that refer to the individual far more and far more highly than others, right? So, like, I mean, we've talked about this in preaching groups that I've been a part of, like the choice to use we as a collective when you talk about something in a sermon versus you or I, and like the distinction. And like, I try to go back and forth when I'm making a particular point and use that intentionally. But for a lot of people, like as a Lutheran, the default is always we. And for a lot of other places, the default is always you or I, like us as individuals. And yeah, I think that definitely plays into that piece as well. So, yeah, I'm thinking about this out loud now, and that's a dangerous place to be. Let's place bets on how long David's ramble is going to go. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the whole point of this podcast, is right, thinking about things out loud that the we have bets. Not practiced.
Yeah,
it's all about the side bets.
Yeah,
for me, I think this is when churches, one, get their views smaller and smaller. First, you know, the problem was like we would have like, here are liberal churches and our conservative churches, here are white churches, here are black churches. Mm-hmm. And then getting down even smaller and smaller into our own individual tribalism that matters so much. And then now getting it to the smallest possible, which is our individual desire in church. Like, and so for me, this is the person coming to church, and all that matters is the music is what they want to hear. And the sermon is speaking to them. And the Bible study that they go to is best for them and their family, and not how am I contributing to a community that is doing good work, even if I'm not always the beneficiary of that good work.
Yeah, I think that has been true for years before even the casinification piece, right? I mean, I think that's been the consumerist mentality of I go to church in order to get something out of it for me. Mm-hmm. So I think we have witness that shift. Maybe this is heightening it. I think that the challenge there is always, right, that we're being called into a community of faith, and how we talk about it as church leadership certainly matters, but certainly how we come to scripture also matters, right? Are we looking at scripture as a way to give me what I need out of it, right? Which is rarely what scripture is actually seeking to do. It'll, you know, fill you in many ways, but it's not just there to meet your need. Or are we turning to scripture and saying, okay, what does God have in store for me and for the world? I think like that's a framework that we need to step back and reassess even further back than just where am I coming when I enter into the church doors.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Step
Great
one.
Great ramble. Yes. You just made me $10.
Yes. You're welcome. You're going to tithe on that, right? That's
yeah. All right. Some other things from McKay's experience doing mm-hmm. online gambling that I think is kind of interesting. So one, he said his growing obsession with his gambling app brought out something in him he never expected, personal hatred.
Personal hatred?
Yeah. When a player he had bet on fumbled the ball, he felt a visceral rage. And notice he was critical of everything from that point on, everything the player did. The way he talked to the post-game press conference, the way he walked up to the end zone. He hated that player.
So the personal hatred is not hatred of himself. It's the hatred of an individual who did something accidental.
I bet on you to make a three.
Yeah.
You missed. And that was a personal offense and hatred attached to that.
That's so interesting that it's not like, I bet on you to make a three. I bet poorly.
Right. Yeah. It's you screwed me over by missing that thing.
Right.
Even though obviously you have no idea what's happening.
That's
know.
Such human nature too. You know? Like it's just so typical.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess if we're applying this to church, then it's, you know, whatever the pastor or whoever does, it's a personal offense to you. It's not just I'm in the wrong headspace, or it's not I, you know, came in and was not ready for this or whatever.
Yeah.
It's you did this to me, which I can see, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, particularly, you know, I don't have these conversations that often at Lord of Life, but when we hear a challenging word, right, we come to church and scripture often challenges us and challenges the things that we hear. And so, you know, one of the comments that people will say is like, well, you were being too political, or you're bringing this up and that up.
Yeah.
And what they often mean is that the words that I spoke or that whoever spoke, right, conflicted with their view of how the world should be, or conflicted with something, right? And oftentimes they'll like quote back to me, and I put quotes in quotes because they're not giving me the exact words that I said, but they'll quote back to me what they heard, right? And what they heard, I'm like, that's interesting. Like that's that's not what I would have said. And so that's not what I said.
Yeah.
And so what might that mean for how Jesus is stirring in you and moving in you, like for you to have heard that, like what that mean, and like let them reflect on that. But they have to be open to that, right? And I think this, what you're describing, this casinification, prevents that, right? If it's me coming at them with a personal offense, like I have attacked them and I have done this thing to them because they expected to get at what they wanted, and instead they're getting this other thing that's making them uncomfortable, then they're never going to enter into that conversation. They're not interested in wrestling with what God might be calling them to because they've been attacked. Mm-hmm. And immediately that's a barrier.
Yeah.
Perhaps an insurmountable barrier. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you can definitely see this idea of like personal hatred being like a motivator is sometimes not only do we do that with people in our own worship spaces of like, I didn't like the way you did that. And over time that builds up where I don't like anything you do now, you know, like everything that person does makes me crazy. Even if it's like nothing.
Yeah.
It's kind of nothing. Like they're just non-factors, or it's weaponized, right? Like it's how do we as a tribe use our mutual personal hatred to bond us closer together against whatever is outside. And so every Sunday is not about worship. It's not about preaching. It's not even about the gospel. It's about here's our personal hatred session against blank. And, you know, church is unified against everything they do. That person or that group unifies us out of hatred. And we can no longer even like see good in any way. You know, everything they do is awful. And I think that this is obviously the more we delve into politics, especially as churches kind of like get there, it's easy to get there. I get it. Like, it's easy to say like, man, the president or whoever is, my personal hatred of them makes me hate everything that they do. Even things that are kind of like not that big of a deal or really fine.
Yeah.
Or even actually kind of good, like what they did. But I can't get past that, what I've already built in. Because, maybe this classification, my individualist goals.
Yeah.
All right, so one last point that I think is kind of interesting. And then in their discussion, they talked about ads coming out for 11 to 14-year-old boys. Floods of ads on their Instagrams and their social medias on Fortnite or whatever.
For Kalshi or whatever,
Convincing them that they can go on there and gamble. And then they can
trade.
They can win doing this.
Yeah. And you can be a winner.
And this is probably the most you know,
I'm shaking my head vigorously listening to you.
You know, the most deceptive thing about all these things is like, you usually don't just put $10 in and you don't put $10 in your slot machine and just lose immediately, because mm-hmm. they're like, well, that's not very fun.
Right.
The goal is to actually win first.
Yeah.
And then you're chasing that win constantly.
Chase that high.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason every ad for every gambling company out there is offering you, put in $10 and we'll give you 50.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Like, it, and it's not so you can just like make, you know, immediately just like withdraw it all. I don't think you can do that anyway.
I'm sure
but,
there are,
but there's rules against that. But it's so you win. Mm-hmm. And so like you hit that dopamine rush and then you end up chasing it over and over and over again. And it can never actually get there.
This is what we call addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, this is like gambling addiction is pretty much taking over America. You know, it's I think it's the highest growing addiction.
I have no idea.
I believe it is. So
I'll believe you, but I have no idea.
I will say I'm not addicted after that immediate $20 loss.
Okay, sure.
In Vegas. I was like, yeah. We did that.
Yeah. But I think that there are obviously people who are.
Oh, absolutely.
And that addiction is taking over. Like, I'm just one bet away.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not if they do it my way.
Probably not.
Probably
you
not.
Don't
that
understand
might be the hack.
What's
is
happening?
Just lose it all in the first one.
That's right. This is the key.
Yeah.
Lose immediately.
Never have fun. Yeah.
So what do you think that could look like in a spiritual sense of chasing a dopamine hit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, isn't that like part of what American Christianity is these days?
Yeah.
Is we are chasing a dopamine hit in our experience of church and Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're coming back to this thing over and over again to be told how right we are and how good we are and how we're on the right side of history and we will go to heaven. And, you know, that's all for us, you know?
Yeah. I'm thinking too about like, you know, our younger, you know, teenagers. What do you say? 11 to 14 year old boys, right?
Yeah.
So 11 to 14 year old boys, they go to camp and they have that kind of metaphorical mountaintop experience, right? Where they maybe find a place where they feel connected and feel like they're really like embraced for the first time. But then they come back to to their community and they may or may not feel that in their own church. They may or not feel that in their school. And so they're chasing that experience of Jesus. And even though there are other experiences of Jesus that can continue to sustain them and build that relationship, they're chasing that one thing and they can never find that because it's out there on the mountaintop, right? It's not here with me where I am right now.
I think that for me is what kind of drew me in there of like, I'm chasing an experience I had at camp when I was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That was real and that was powerful. And I'm not even saying it was bad,
but
cannot be gotten again, especially if it's like, I have kids now. I can't do that same dopamine rush or hit that I once got when I was, you know, working at summer camp and experiencing God in these exciting and fresh ways. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, that's just not realistic. I've got to figure out, the church has to figure out how to like operate in the real world where you're not going to, every Sunday is not going to be the greatest Sunday you've ever had.
Yeah.
That's an impossibility.
And except you look around and you look at churches who are like, okay, this week we're going to have people, you know, on rappelling over them and playing the drums. And then the next week we're going to have this major roller coaster that the pastor is going to come in on. And the next week we're going to have a star basketball player come in. Like, they're trying to make that. Like, they're catering to that mentality of every Sunday is going to be the best Sunday
you've
ever
had. Has got to top the last Sunday. Yes. And eventually you can't, right? Like, eventually you end up in a space where like, well, we did it. We got the best possible experience we could possibly get, and it's all downhill from here.
Yeah.
What do you do now?
Yeah.
And I think that is kind of somewhat interesting, right? Like, just like, you know, in a marriage, like you have like the best possible first year of marriage where you're loving each other and excited and you're going on trips. And then 30 years in, you're like, well, we have a mortgage. We have kids. Like, you can't get it back, but you have to like, but there's still maybe even a greater love in the midst of that. And in the same way, there's a greater following of Jesus when you're like, you're just doing it every day and it's no longer about a dopamine hit. It's about service to community and persevering on even when my individual goals are not being met and still wanting to support something bigger and beautiful because I feel like we're going to win together or lose together.
Yeah. I will say that, like, the reverse of that, right? The pressure of the leader to offer that is also a real thing. And like, as leaders, we have to be willing to stand in the discomfort of saying, I know this is not going to be able to top every single week. Like, you know, and we've got to be in that too. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to say like, that sermon was fine.
Yep.
Like, it was just fine. Like, you know, it probably isn't going to be memorable for many, many people, but it was totally fine. Like, yeah. you know, glorified God.
Was it faithful? Yeah.
Pointed to the scripture, pointed to God, and that's just what it is.
Yep.
And that is okay sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that's an uncomfortable place to be too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's because we feel like the house, and we feel like the house has to provide the...
House always wins.
Yeah, but I don't feel like I win, right? If the house always wins, why don't I feel it? Yeah, anyway.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe you're not the house.
Maybe I'm not the house. Yeah. Who is the house? Are you the house?
No.
Okay. I don't know. Someone's the house. Someone's winning. It's not me.
All right. There you go.
Any other thoughts?
I don't think so.
All right. So slot machines in the Narthex. That's what I hear from today.
Blackjack.
Blackjack. Oh, black. Yeah. Well, then we got to pay a dealer.
Blackjack has much. The table games have much more community feel.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's a community thing.
But we got to pay a dealer. That's so much work.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Spend money, make money.
Right.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Yeah. Well, listeners, if you want to listen to all of our episodes, you can find those at beyondsundaypodcast.com. If you have a suggestion for what casino game should be in our Narthex, send those to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.